If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
Welcome to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. It's Tuesday. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. We're here every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 at noon. We changed that a couple of weeks ago, Maddie.
Got to get those numbers down right
now. I know. I'm joined by our producer, Maddie Rowe.
Hey, guys.
And we got a good show for you today. Hey, coming off a victory and a couple of teams, other teams in Florida lost. So, you know, we can also celebrate other people's misfortune. So anyway, big show, a lot of information to get out to you. I think stuff you won't hear anywhere else. Definitely going to touch on in the last segment, going to touch on the Facebook issue that is sort of hit the news all over the country. It has so many implications nationally, but let me tell you what, it hits right here locally, some of the things that we're seeing. And I want to talk about it. Stuff that we've talked about here about how politicians want to divide us. They want us to hate our neighbors because we're easier to identify. Well, look, that's being promoted by Facebook also based on this whistleblower. And so I want to talk about that a little bit in terms of what Facebook is doing and how they're making their money. And then look at how it is happening right here locally in our, you know, in our city commission, on our school board, and actually in our classrooms of middle school students. And so, look, this is a, I think this is, you know, a five-alarm fire from an information standpoint. This, you know, I think it's all out there to see. This is not theory anymore. There are corporations, there are politicians that want to divide us, and they want to do it because it benefits them. We're going to talk about how that happens and what can we do about it. I mean, it's, look, the thing is, can you address it without fight doing what they actually want you to do, which is fight with each other? So I'll make some comments about that in the last segment, give you some examples. Next segment, we're going to talk about the Leon County vaccine mandate. Things started hitting rapid pace on Friday when a reminder letter went out from Leon County government, letting everybody know they didn't have long to get vaccinated or turn in their opt-out form. Governor DeSantis responded when he heard about that letter. And then on Saturday, a letter went out, basically talking about the number of people that were terminated. And so there's a good back and forth that we'll go over in the next segment and look at the implications. Again, an issue that divides us, no doubt about it, that I think that the officials at Leon County government want to, you know, I think they would brag about how many people they were able to get vaccinated. And we'll go over those numbers and how many people were I guess terminated if they did not, were scheduled to be terminated. There's some debate about exactly how this happened, and I haven't heard any more information about that today, but we'll go over that. The bottom of the hour, we are scheduled, and this is a first, or not a first, but we don't do this very often on Above the Fold, but we're scheduled to have State Representative Toby Overdorf call in and talk about a bill that he's championing in the legislature. Called it's House Bill 41, the Litigation Financing and Consumer Protection Act. So we'll talk to him about that. It's again, when you hear something called the Consumer Protection Act, we want to make sure that it actually is protecting consumers. We'll get the details on it. I've read about it. You know, it's one of these. It's something that addresses people that get put in bad positions through no fault of their own, and then you know they have to sometimes. Go to extreme measures to get what is coming to them from the legal system. And this is supposed to, and obviously there are people there to make money off of that. So this is, from a consumer protection perspective, it's supposed to make it easier for people who are in dire straits through no fault of their own, give them some recourse. So we'll talk about that and also cover some other state news. You know, we've got the incoming president of the Florida Senate talking about shutting down prisons. That's not, and now he's a conservative. And so this is an interesting issue because it is where bureaucracy meets law enforcement. You know, conservatives, Republicans are, you know, very strict on law enforcement, you know, wanting to be sure that they're people that are a danger to society or in prison. Well, here we have the incoming president of the Senate proposing to shut down prisons because they're not being operated efficiently. So we'll try to cover that a little bit. And before we get out of here on this segment, I wanted to bring your attention to Trulieve, a company that was founded in Tallahassee, is now the largest marijuana retailer in the country. This is from a story on News Service of Florida of Derek Ham, the writer. Trulieve, the state's largest medical marijuana operator, is now the nation's biggest cannabis retailer after closing on a $2.1 billion deal to acquire former competitor Harvest Health and Recreation Incorporated. It says here the transaction marks a major development in Florida where Harvest held one of 22 licenses to cultivate, process, and sell medical marijuana. Trulieve CEO and Tallahassee resident Kim Rivers called the closing of the deal a transformational milestone in her Gadsden County-based company's brief history. When we really started five short years ago, I wasn't taking a salary. And I was in the back making capsules and ensuring that shipments went out on time. Trulieve was one of the state's first medical marijuana operators, launching after Florida lawmakers in 2014 approved non-euphoric cannabis for patients with severe epilepsy. Now, for those who don't know the history here, for a short period of time, local governments were given the authority to regulate to some degree these marijuana operators. They actually had to file for permits. Trulieve opened their first dispensary here in Tallahassee. And that did come up during the trial of J.T. Burnett, who was married to Kim Rivers, in his public corruption trial. But it was a 3-2 vote on the city commission to actually put a moratorium in place after Trulieve had been given their license. Now, obviously, that all got worked out. The regulation moved up to the state level, and they were one of the fastest growing in Florida. Not the fastest. I mean, they were the fastest. Sotera was, I guess, just behind them. But as the market developed and more services were allowed to be sold through these dispensaries, you know, Trulieve just really rocketed. And now, obviously, they are starting to buy other companies. And it says here that Trulieve is establishing a, quote, regional hub strategy across the United States with hubs in Florida, Pennsylvania, and Arizona, Rivers said, to be better positioned as more states approve medical marijuana and others legalize adult recreational use of marijuana. The regional focus should offset patients' concerns about the big boxing of the marijuana business, according to Rivers. She also said Trulieve, which operates in states where recreational use of marijuana is legal, as well as others where marijuana is restricted for medical use, has a 70% retention rate among customers. So the idea here is they are getting in position to operate in, you know, different states with different sets of regulations and rules. And the point being they can operate anywhere where it is just a medical marijuana or where it is recreational use. As you know, Nikki Fried, the who's running for governor and is head of the Agriculture and Consumer Affairs, has been promoting legalizing marijuana. I think her often tweets, if you want to legalize marijuana, vote for me for governor. She actually reported on her financial disclosure form that she had a financial interest in the company that Trulieve just bought. So, look, she was a marijuana lobbyist before she ran for office. Everybody knew that. And this is, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars market here in Florida. And it will start when there's that kind of money, it will find its way into politics and it will start driving politics. So anyway, a little Trulieve information. All right, we get back. We'll focus on some things local here, specifically the Leon County vaccine mandate, but also bring you up to date on a new candidate who has filed to run for a city commission seat. My name is Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold. We'll be right back after this break.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. We have talked about the political season beginning here locally next year. There's a number of seats that are up for election every year in the school board and city commission and also the county commission. A couple of campaigns have already been kicked off. Incumbents like to get a good start and raise money. I know Mayor John Daly has started to raise money, and so has City Commissioner Jeremy Matlow. Well, we'll have at least, it looks like we're going to have a race, or Jeremy Matlow will have an opponent, David Bellamy, a surgeon and a part-time Tallahassee police officer, has filed to run against Commissioner Matlow in the 2022 election. He signed his paperwork on Friday. He's running for officially for seat three, which is now currently occupied by Jeremy Matlow. He's a fifth-generation Tallahassean and the son of former City Commissioner Carol Bellamy. I believe she was also the mayor at one point. Said that he would work to restore trust in City Hall through transparency, accountability, and collegiality. So the first two words I think I associate with Mr. Matlow, collegiality, is one that is probably a little different. And I think, you know, I've talked to Mr. Bellamy or Dr. Bellamy before he got in the race when I, and, you know, I asked him some questions. And I think one of the issues that he's going, I will tell you, and that first question I asked now, it's weird because I got into running for office because all the seats were nonpartisan. But that doesn't mean anything because, you know, if you are a Republican or an independent, you're going to be called that. And so he is a registered Democrat. I think his mom ran as a Democrat on the city commission. So that's an interesting perspective in the sense you basically have two Democrats running with Commissioner Matlow, who would be, I guess, the progressive shade. And so anyway, but I think the point here is, obviously been in Tallahassee for a long time. I think his concern is that the collegiality of the elected office has sort of declined. And I agree. And we'll talk about, I think Facebook's probably had a lot to do with that and some other things, but we'll talk about that in the last segment. So I think that's his position on that is going to be something that he can maybe separate himself from Commissioner Matlow. However, I mean, from Matlow's position is that you've got to really turn things upside down if you want to change the system. So I think that's going to be the choice that the voters are going to have to make here if he's able to raise some money and get his message out. Again, he's an orthopedic surgeon, so probably he's got a pretty good base of people to raise money from and has been here a long time. So we'll have to see how this, how this develops moving forward. I think, again, one of the things here is the law enforcement issue. I know that Commissioner Matlow, just from the progressive nature, has been very, I think critical would be the word to use, very obviously very concerned about how law enforcement behaves. You know, you remember, over the summer with the social justice movement, we had a little bit of an issue here in Tallahassee. So it'll be interesting to see how that's gets played out because we had an issue in the sense there were some demonstrations, but I think for the most part, we've talked to some of the elected law enforcement officials, Sheriff, the Leon County Sheriff, and also the police chief, and they made some comments that, look, what's going on here in Leon County and Tallahassee, is not what's going on nationally. And so I think that'll be a line of questioning or an issue that Mr. Bellamy may try to pursue. But look, when you have an incumbent like Mr. Matlow, who has got a strong following, is very vocal, it will be interesting to see if someone that, again, may be well-known in specific segments of the community, but does not have this, the level of popularity or the visibility that a city commissioner has. We'll see if they're able to compete. Now, you hear a lot of talk about how social media allows some people to compete, whereas previously they could not. We'll see if that happens here. So anyway, wanted to get that information to you. Now on to the Leon County vaccine mandate. Flurry of activity on Friday. A letter went out from Leon County as a reminder letter to people that had not gotten their vaccine, and they were told that, listen, if you don't get your vaccine by October 1st at 11:59, you'd be terminated. After that letter was sent out, the reminder letter, I think the governor's office got a whiff of what was going on, and then they had their own letter that was sent out from the Department of Health, was sent to Leon County Administrator Vince Long. In that letter, Director Doug Woodleaf asked Long to immediately rescind its policy, which violates Florida statutes, and to refrain from terminating any employee. The letter from FDOH threatened Leon County with fines for each employee who was required to submit proof of vaccination. The fines would be $5,000 per employee, totaling close to $3 to $4 million for Leon County. So on Saturday, a letter was sent out that notified the community that 700 people were it was sent out in sort of a thank you letter from Leon County Administrator Vince Long, thanking those 700 employees who did become fully vaccinated and the 30 who submitted an accommodation. Evidently, there was 14 employees who were due to be terminated. In that letter, he also responded to the previous Florida Department of Health letter. And he said Long vowed to fight back, quote, "There is a genuine disagreement about the applicability of the statute and the rule, and the county will enforce its rights using any remedies available at law if necessary." Here we go. There was a case in Alachua County, which is the seat to Gainesville, where the city of Gainesville had issued this vaccine mandate. There was a ruling that put that in jeopardy. Said, listen, you have not made the case that this is the way to go. In other words, that there are not less burdensome approaches to take. And so the city of Gainesville actually voted to back off of that mandate. And obviously, Leon County was aware of that finding, but decided to move forward. Now, if you go back and look at this, this has been a policy of the county administrator, Vince Long, from the very beginning. He has been very vocal and public about the position of the county. He's been on CNN, I think at least twice, to promote what their policy is. His argument is that they are doing this because they have to be able to deliver services, sometimes emergency services, and therefore the vaccine mandate is the way to go. So that's their argument. And if you look at what happened here, it looks like 98% of the he was able to get 98% of the employees vaccinated, with only 30 who submitted a opt-out accommodation. So if I'm Vince Long, he's arguing that, look what I was able to do here. I was able to get 98% of our employees vaccinated, which is a good thing. However, I think that if you go look at some of the language from the judge in Alachua County, you're putting in a measure that some people would call, a violation of rights, and that there's not a substantive reason to do that given the facts at hand. In other words, could you allow for a testing opt-out for people that didn't want to get vaccinated and still meet your goal? So I think that's going to be the issue they're going to run into. The other thing too is arguing that you had to do this to be able to compete, to continue to provide services. Look, I think there's only two or three local governments that have this mandate in place across the state of Florida, and services are being provided. Well, hell, they're even being provided here in Leon County by some organizations much bigger than Leon County, the city, the school board, the sheriff's department. And so I think that when this gets to the nuts and bolts of a legal case and those things are fleshed out, I guess the point will be, is this going to be moot? I guess not, now that I think about it, because there are people that actually were terminated. But it will be interesting how long it will take to decide it. And COVID could be just basically gone in the next month or so, and you're going to be talking about this. And what is there? What will be the recourse of the employees? Will they get their job back? Will they be asking for more money? But I don't know. We'll have to keep an eye on it. But it definitely is something that is unique to Leon County. And so any legal case will be, could be precedent setting. So we'll keep an eye on that. All right, when we get back, as I said, we will be joined by Representative Toby Overdorf from Stuart, Florida. If not, we'll just talk about the bill that he's proposing. So we'll see how that goes. Stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold.
If it's local and it matters, It's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. We're here every Tuesday and Thursday at noon. And like I like to say, we're full of information. We like to focus on a lot of local things here and get you caught up to date on county commission, city commission, school board. We also are the state capitol, and we cover things that sometimes are very interesting that develop across the street at the capitol. And so currently now, hopefully I have on the line Representative Toby Overdorf from Stuart, Florida. Representative, are you with us?
I certainly am. Thank you so much, Steve, for having me on today.
Well, thanks for joining us. And you are out of Stuart, Florida, is that correct?
That is correct. Over on the Treasure Coast, just north of Palm Beach, and it's a great place to be down here.
All right, well, thanks for joining us. Now, there's a House bill that you are sponsoring that we want to talk about, and I've read up on it a little bit, and I wanted you to take just a couple minutes to just give an overview of House Bill 41, which is titled the Litigation Financing Consumer Protection Act. When you hear a title like that, it's a consumer-related bill, so give us an overview and how this is going to help people.
Well, absolutely, and again, thank you for having me on. The reality is that currently the litigation financing for consumers is a business that doesn't really take into account many times the consumer itself. And it's a unregulated area of lending for individuals that have the unfortunate ability to go through a lawsuit or something like that. They've had something happen to them. They are unable to either work or they're unable to do the normal things. So they need a little extra money to get through the time of the suit and get through that time. So long and short of it is they would go out and they would try to secure some type of financing that helps them during that time. And many times, and what we've looked into and found, is that litigation financing is that stopgap, if you will. Well, the issue that I've had with it is that, in fact, this litigation financing is unregulated in Florida, and we're finding that interest rates can be anywhere between as little as the normal of what you would expect, say prime plus two or something along those lines, to as much as 30-40%, and even compounding interest on these individuals. So it doesn't really take into account the consumer many times also, and not there are great companies out there that do this, but there are others that, in fact, almost approach this as a loan shark, if you will, and they are collecting interest first. The consumer itself can never, in fact, pay off this loan, or the lawsuit itself, which is really designed in the long run, to help out the plaintiff and to take care of whatever it was that happened to them, the proceeds from that are going entirely towards the financing rather than going towards the consumer itself. So that's an area that we're really looking at. And the bill itself, all it does is, just like many other folks that do loaning, they would in fact register. They would have a surety bond. There would be a contract that is spelled out between the financier and the plaintiff themselves. So all of these things that you would find normally if you have a car loan or if you're going to get a home equity loan or other things like that, they're all spelled out. And so this is just another way that we can protect our consumers here in Florida that are going through a hard time. And in no way does this legislation actually look at any type of funding between a company or a attorney that is actually doing the litigation themselves and whatever the litigant it is. So in other words, in no way does this address a relationship between a law firm and a lender by any means. This is strictly between the plaintiff or the consumer and a lender that allows them to, in fact, get through that time, get through the period in which they're going through the suit, and in fact, then registers these folks so that everything is above board, everybody knows what the contract is, and again, I'm really just looking to try to protect our Floridians and protect the citizens.
Yeah, so the a good example of this, I think what basic from me reading this, would be someone that's really working paycheck to paycheck, they're in a car accident that's not their fault, And so there's going to be a lawsuit, but they can't go to work because say they're injured. So we're not talking about a lot of money here. We're talking about $20,000 to $50,000 that they can borrow to get them because they've been displaced of due to some action that they had no part in. Is that a good example of someone that would benefit from this?
That's an absolutely fantastic example. And that person there, because they're in such a position, they've got to make that mortgage payment. Maybe they are, as you said, going from paycheck to paycheck. They have to pay for daycare or whatever else it may be. And they can't do it without the financing that could be presented to them. And those are the folks that also are Floridians that may be most vulnerable to some kind of a loan that, in fact, would not only get them through the time, but then would handcuff them and really cause some major financial damage as they go in the future. So now they've had an accident. It's something that, as you said, and I agree, it's not their fault. They're going through this process, and all of a sudden, now they have another layer of problems on top of that, which is the unregulated litigation financing.
Yeah, and the other thing that I thought was interesting is that someone that is in an accident like that, if they can't get this loan, then they actually become they're at a disadvantage in negotiations because the other side knows that they can't stay out of work very long, and so it really puts them at a disadvantage that way also.
Absolutely. They become more and more desperate, so they push and push and push for a settlement right away. And as a result, the opposing side, in fact, does have that advantage, and the financier or the litigant themselves just wants it done immediately. So they can get that money in their pocket and they can move on. So yes, I couldn't agree more. The other side oftentimes is very well funded and can wait it out, but that person who of course had the accident happen to them, they need their money in their pocket, and so we're just trying to number one, as you said, give them that advantage, but number two, make sure they don't become a long-term disadvantage by having to owe somebody way down long past the decision that has been made in the court case.
Now, on the legislation side, obviously this is a House bill, and you've got to have a Senate companion. You've got to get the governor to sign this into law. What's the future of the bill in terms of having a sponsor and Governor DeSantis's view of this?
Well, we haven't gone that far to meet with the governor and his staff at this point in time. We have identified a couple of different folks over in the Senate that are looking at this bill specifically right now, and we'll most likely have that filed before the next couple of weeks here. We chose that we were going to do an early file on this, and thus the low number here, House Bill 41, was one of the first 20 bills that were filed in the Florida House for this session. So we're really committed to working hard on this one and to make sure that the questions are answered and that we are going to be protecting, again, those citizens throughout the state of Florida that need this kind of financing. And that is, we are steadfast to how we're going to be doing this.
All right. Well, Representative Overdorf, thanks so much for joining me. And I appreciate you taking the time, explained it very well, and just getting information out about legislation. It'll hopefully be taken up early next year during session. So safe travels, and see you in Tallahassee in a couple of months.
Well, thank you, Steve. I really appreciate it. We'll be up there next week for committees, and hopefully be getting on a committee here soon. We'll be happy to update you as this proceeds through the process. And again, thank you for doing what you do every day and talking to those folks in Tallahassee and beyond and letting us know what the local, the state, and sometimes even the federal issues are. Really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Representative. All right. That's Representative Toby Overdorf from Stuart, Florida, talking about House Bill 41. And, you know, again, this is one of these things that sometimes a lot of people can't relate to. But, like, if you are working, you know, paycheck to paycheck and from no fault of your own, you get slammed in a car accident and you're in the hospital. If you don't, you know, you may have some insurance to help pay some of the bills. But the idea that becomes a negotiating position that hurts you when you, get into the legal process, that's what this is trying to help out. And again, he used the term, and I actually saw it in an article, loan sharks, people that, you know, are trying to borrow money for this situation. So anyway, I appreciate him joining us. Now, I wanted to pivot to one more story here of statewide significance before we get out. And that is a story about Florida Senate President Wilton Simpson proposing prison shutdowns. And this is an interesting story to me because of the different positions here, obviously law enforcement versus government bureaucracy. And this is going to be interesting to watch, because you got a powerful Senate president who is proposing prison shutdowns, which is, look, the thing about prisons are they are economic drivers in a lot of rural communities. All you got to do is look at the panhandle. And his argument now is that the Florida Department of Corrections should shut down prisons to save money rather than ask for more resources from Florida legislature. And that's because he says they're not being run efficiently. And so this is going to be interesting to debate to watch, because there's a shortage for people to man these prisons, correction officers. So we'll keep an eye on it and keep you updated on this throughout the session. All right, when we get back, we're going to talk about Facebook and the implications of what they're doing. And, you know, this is something we've been talking about, and it's happening right here in our local community, too. So we'll talk more about that. So stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. Appreciate Representative Toby Overdorf joining us. I didn't tell him, but Stewart, Florida, I grew up in Fort Pierce.
Oh, right in his neck of the woods.
Right, 19 miles north.
Yeah.
I remember as a kid going to Stewart to watch the Fort, was it? Maybe it was Dan McCarty at the time. Dan McCarty Eagles play a football game. Anyway, a long time ago. About a few more people down there now. Just a few. Anyway, we're going to pivot now. You know, this thing with Facebook that hit over the weekend with the whistleblower Frances Haugen. You know, we've been talking about here on the air about how it is, you know, it's in the best interest of the politicians and a lot of corporations to divide us. And, you know, we've talked about how they take these issues, and there's no move to try to reach a consensus. It's just everybody appeals to their base on all these issues, and social media has, you know, really helped accentuate that, those differences, because of the way people get on their social media and they fight with each other. But now what's, you know, more interesting, I guess it's not interesting, and it's not surprising, but this whistleblower is saying that Facebook, who once had a civic integrity section, which was trying to get rid of some of the extreme positions or extreme views, violent posts on Facebook, they disengaged that or did away with it after the election. And, you know, the interview that was on 60 Minutes, I didn't watch it, but I've read a transcript. I want to read a little bit from that transcript. Basically says that Facebook is, you know, they are promoting these posts that will make you angry because they can make more money from that. It says, the whistleblower said, so, you know, you have your phone. You might see only 100 pieces of content if you sit and scroll on for, you know, 5 minutes. But Facebook has thousands of options that it could show you. The algorithm picks from those options based on the kind of content you've engaged with the most in the past. And one of the consequences of how Facebook is picking out the content today is it is optimizing for content that gets engagement or reaction. But its own research is showing that content that is hateful, that is divisive, that is polarizing, it's easier to inspire people to anger and then it is to other emotions. And so the questioner says, so misinformation, angry content is enticing to people and keep them on the platform. She responds, yes, Facebook has realized that if they change the algorithm to be safer, people will spend less time on the site, they will click on less ads, and they will make less money. Haugen says Facebook understood the danger to the 2020 election, so it turned on safety systems to reduce misinformation, but many of those changes, he says, were temporary. And as soon as the election was over, they turned them back off, or they change the setting back to where they were before to prioritize growth over safety. So, look, I don't know how surprising this is, but basically just envision someone in this back room that sees, they have a dial, and the more that they can get people to hate each other and to react the more money they make, because the more time you stay on, the more ads are seen. So they just keep turning this dial. And now the point on this is this is both you know, left and right, conservative and liberal. They talked about in this article about how they promoted how Facebook could, like, these issues in Western United States and Portland, Oregon, in terms of the riots and stuff out there, of what was posted to continue to sort of, I guess, provide information and to upset people, to get them to comment on this, in terms of what the protests were about there. And so, you know, this person, whistleblower, is actually testifying in Congress, I believe, today. And so the issue now is that if we know what's going on, it's one thing to know what's going on. It's another thing to understand how you deal with it. When you're talking about a big faceless corporation that is doing this all over the world. Now, and the point I didn't make here, they actually talked about how ethnic violence, including Myanmar in 2018, when the military used Facebook to launch genocide, that Facebook was actually being used as a pawn in that situation. And so, but, you know, how do you deal with this? Do you quit Facebook? Again, you're dealing with this big corporation, you know, a billion-dollar corporation. Well, I think one of the things you can do is you can look here locally and look at how we've talked about this, how we are dividing people. We're not reaching any kind of compromise. Now, look, we're in a county that is one-party rule, okay? It's basically in all the nonpartisan positions, we have Democrats that are elected to these offices, and I understand that. So that actually gives them more responsibility to reach out and to try to address this. And I think, you know, we've talked about here with the city of Tallahassee doing these resolutions that are basically virtual signals on some of these national issues, voting rights and abortion and, social justice or basically violence here, which we don't have these problems in Leon County. So why are we addressing them? Is it to divide people? Is it to reassure the people that are already supporting you? I mean, there's no danger here of a city official not being reelected because they take a stand on a pro-choice stand on abortion. There's absolutely no risk of them losing. But the question would be, do they have the understanding that, look, maybe we shouldn't be doing this because we don't have any authority over this, and all it's going to do is make our neighbors less amenable to what we're trying to say on maybe some things that really do matter. And we see it in the school system. We talked about the story last week in Montford Middle School, where they are basically promoting a social issue. We're turning our schoolrooms into places where people, you know, are going to be taking positions. Why in math class do we have to have posters that are talking about gender issues? And why do we have to have posters talking about any kind of social issue in a math classroom or a science classroom? I mean, it just makes no sense. We're doing this to divide us. And so I think when you start reading about what is going on with Facebook and you say, oh, well, you know, I really can't do anything other than quitting Facebook, and that's really not going to have an impact. I think you need to focus, sort of like what Above the Fold does here, focus on what's happening locally. Where can you make an impact? And, you know, good. Look, for people that I would consider themselves to be, you know, conservative or moderate, it is up to those in the majority to reach across the aisle and to understand exactly what is happening here. So I think that when you have elected officials taking these extreme positions on issues they have no authority over, just to sort of reassure who they are, I think that should raise a huge red flag. And, you know, I hope that city commissioners, school board members, and county commissioners who, again, run for a nonpartisan office will focus on addressing issues here locally that are an issue. In other words, sidewalks, roads, economic growth. And yes, look, law enforcement is an issue, but we have addressed that here. We've talked about that. You know, we have an African-American sheriff, Florida Walt. The sheriff here in Leon County is Walt McNeil. We have interviewed him. The issues that we see nationally, we don't have here in Leon County. And so that, so why do we have to keep taking positions, or we have to keep talking about that from our local officials? If you want to address this stuff, run for a statewide seat. You know, challenge Allison Tanner, someone else here, if you want to talk about those. But these are statewide or national issues, and we should not go out of our way to try to divide our community. There's enough local issues, be it a bike path up Thomasville Road or what side of town to do development on, to, you know, raise the debate and to get people engaged. No need to deal with these national issues. Anyway, all right. Thanks for joining us today. Stay tuned for the Jeff Cameron Show, and we'll be back on Thursday. Have a great afternoon.
It's gonna be bright.